It was a bit of a long one. Thanks for bearing with. I was reminded in praying with today's readings, which mention over and over the law and the commandments, of my first semester studying theology at Mundelein Seminary. One of the first classes that we take there as seminarians is a moral theology class. And part of this class was that we had to take a Ten Commandments quiz, where the professor would randomly name four or five commandments, like Commandment 1, Commandment 4, Commandment 6 and 7, so on and so forth. And we had to write down what that commandment was. The idea being, if someone comes to us in confession and confesses breaking the fifth commandment against their coworker, we better know that they're not talking about lying to their coworker. The trick being, however, that if even one of us did not get 100% on that quiz, then everyone failed and we all had to take it again. And we would keep taking it until everybody passed. Well, shamefully, I must admit, this quiz that realistically any second grader in religious education could pass took us half a semester to all pass. Now, I share this story, hopefully not to scandalize you. I promise we all know the Ten Commandments. But because of what we would talk about after our professor was done yelling at us for failing that quiz, we spent much of that class talking about today's gospel. In particular, the passage that Jesus begins speaking to his disciples. Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have come not to abolish, but to fulfill. Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have come not to abolish, but to fulfill. What does this mean? What does it mean for the law to be fulfilled in Jesus Christ? Well, to understand this, we have to understand what the purpose of the law was for ancient Israel. Ultimately, we could say broadly that it is God's desire to be close with his people. We see this all throughout the Old Testament. God sought Abraham. God sought Jacob. God sought Moses. And he gives to Moses, to his people, who are wandering through the desert, continually threatening to turn back to slavery in Egypt, who are constantly threatening to turn away from the one God to the many pagan gods. God gives them the law, not as a set of rules, but as boundaries for them to stay in relationship with him. Then, throughout the rest of the Old Testament, we see Israel constantly pulling away from God. Yet he keeps trying to draw them back. He sends them the judges. He sends them the prophets. But then he sends them the Messiah. Jesus, God himself made flesh. Despite the Israelites' infidelity towards him, God does not abandon them. He becomes one of them. The ultimate act of God seeking his people. So with this through line, this desire on the part of God to claim the hearts of his creation for himself, we see that what Jesus means when he says that he is the fulfillment of the law. He is not eliminating God's pursuit of his people, the original purpose of the law, but he is bringing it new life. He is giving it a new dynamic. This is why in these examples that he puts before his disciples, he's not seemingly very concerned about the abstract action, but of the heart, of the disposition of the heart. And don't hear what I'm not saying. The action, of course, still matters. Our God is not a God of relativism. Yet he is inviting us to allow for a deeper transformation of our hearts. He takes these external manifestations of internal dispositions, murder, adultery, and points his disciples to look at those dispositions that lay beneath: anger, lust. Because the Christian life is not merely about avoiding sin, but growing in virtue. Yet even more than growing in virtue, we are seeking the conformity of our frail, weak, sinful humanity to the sacred humanity of Jesus Christ. The transformation of our hearts unto the sacred heart of Jesus. And brothers and sisters, this isn't some pious feel-good notion. We talk often about our hearts becoming like Jesus, us becoming like Jesus, but this is a real reality that we are called to pursue. We see this in the lives of great saints. Saint Teresa of Avila, who experienced the ecstasy of her heart being united to the heart of Jesus. Saint Philip Neri, whose ribs were broken because of the swelling and burning of his heart in his experience of the love of God. Now, to be sure, these manifestations are mystical gifts, but the essence of what's going on there is the same. We are called to this same union, this same conformity to Jesus. And this looks like something. It is the silent offering of our hearts to Jesus in prayer. Not to seek self-referential affirmation or continual consolation from God, but to examine our hearts against the backdrop of Jesus' sacred heart. To see the areas of our hearts that are yet to be purified. To see where his heart burns with charity for the poor and the suffering and the outcast, while ours remain cold and icy. To see where his heart burns with zeal to bring souls to his church, while ours shy away from witnessing to the faith and proclaiming the gospel. To see these places and allow the Lord to purify them, something his grace alone can do. And now, I don't say these things to shame or deride. My heart is in just as great of need of purification as anyone else's. Rather, because Jesus pines for us to be entirely his with everything that we are. He desires to draw us to himself in such a way that everything we do becomes a witness to his love, his mercy, and his goodness. And if we allow this transformation to happen, this lifetime, a lifetime of turning to him, we may be so blessed to receive the mysterious and hidden wisdom and glory of our Father. The glory which eye has not seen and ear has not heard, and which remains hidden from our hearts, but that he has been preparing for his creation from the dawn of time. Amen.